Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Fighting Words on the Fighting Words News Network. Fighting Words is brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of police and fire services, the men and women of the United States Service, by Dr. Kathleen Carroll, in private practice. She's a psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll previously was the director of inpatient services at the Bay Pines VA Hospital, the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children ages 6 and older and the treatment of adults, in other words, from the womb to the tomb. She's also an all-time triathlete. So if you're having any problems breaking through into any level of athletics, give her a call at 813-689-2466. Or if you're having problems with life, please give her a call. Don't take it out on anybody else. Ladies and gentlemen, I hate to start the program off on a sad note, but this week we've had some tragedies. Deputy Mike Weiner was severely hurt in an automobile accident. He was T-boned by a drunk driver on Wednesday night. And Captain John, you have one of your men. We tell the crowd.
Yeah, it's been a tough week for the Monroe County Sheriff's Office down in Key West, Florida. The first answer place is our Sheriff Rick Ramsey. His father passed yesterday. Was Dick Ramsey, a longtime city councilman, and he passed unexpectedly yesterday. And then early this morning, we had a deputy respond to a disturbance, and he was attacked from behind, knocked unconscious, and kicked in the face numerous times. So he was airlifted out to Ryder Trauma in Miami, and they are stabilizing him, and we're hoping for a speedy recovery. So I am short on time tonight. I'm going to assist the wife getting up there and see what that way he's surrounded by family. But I just want to make sure that I did call in and, obviously ask for the listeners' prayers. And it's been a tough week for both the boxing world and for the sheriff's office.
That's right. And we appreciate you doing that, John. As always, this program is dedicated to everybody in the service and in the police and fire services. Please give his wife our best wishes. And if there's anything that anybody in Fighting Words can do, either staff or some of our listeners, let us know, and we'll put it right out.
Beautiful. I will. Thank you very much for that.
Well, John, I know you and Zito probably are probably two of the most fluent people when it comes to another great that has passed, Muhammad Ali. Do you want to start?
Let Zito start. He's a vet, but yeah, I'd like to go on and say a few words, but I'll let Zito start. And it's been, like I said, a tough week for the boxing world, and he's going to be missed.
Yep. Thank you very much, Captain John. First of all, I would like to say hello to everyone, all our listeners, and all the Fighting Words family. We have had a tragedy in the boxing world. Muhammad Ali has passed, if I'm correct, at age 74.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, and everybody knows who Muhammad Ali is and everything. So I'll let Captain John take it from here.
Yeah, well, I mean, voted number one as the most recognizable athlete to ever grace the earth. Obviously, many before him went ahead and put boxing on the map, but he sure carried a torch for a long time. And more importantly, the man that he was a man of conviction, a man of faith. And, doing a lot of research on Muhammad Ali through my career and through my lifetime, to respect decisions he made. And I am a war veteran, and I served my country. And I know Muhammad Ali, especially at that time, was asked to go fight for his country and chose not to. Was stripped of the belt, was banned from boxing, and he was condemned from that at that time. And it was a courageous decision. And you have to understand, when a man like that makes a decision with his own convictions, it's for a reason. At that time, the African-Americans, the African-Americans really, they weren't treated properly in this country, and he felt that way, and he decided that's the way he made his stand, and to his faith. So, both as a man and as a boxer, I may not have agreed with every decision he's made in life, as with anybody, but you have to go on and give credit where credit is due, with respect what respect is doing. He gave up his career for what he believed would be make this country a better place.
I totally agree. When someone has something to lose, has everything to lose, yet they stick with their decision and their convictions, you know that it's deeper than anything on the surface, anything else. It's a personal thing. So with that decision, Muhammad Ali had every single thing to lose. He had more to gain by going into the forces. They wouldn't have put him in a fighting role. They would have put him in, like, the Joe Louis role. He would have went around and more or less entertainment. But he didn't. He went through his convictions, and you have to stick by that. And I just wanted to say, I'm a technical guy, as far as the aspect of technical boxing. And literally, Muhammad Ali was the Michael Jordan of boxing. He reshaped how fighters wanted to come in and fight. Muhammad was not technically fundamental at all, to be honest. What he had extreme instincts He had intelligence, instincts, and he was tough. He was fast and tough. So he transformed what boxers wanted to be. When you had boxers coming to the sport, I want to be like Joe Louis. I want to, you know, have that technique. To the point to where when now Ali, he transformed the sport to where everybody wanted to, you know, have that fat, flashy, dance around style and everything. That's what made Sugar Ray Leonard so popular. So
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, like you're saying, Muhammad Ali, he had everything, you know. He was one of the greatest boxers who ever lived, and maybe even the greatest boxer ever lived. Yeah.
I agree with you as maybe the greatest ever.
He also had a small vignette on YouTube of when he fought Leon Spinks, and he's in the corner. He's got both gloves on the ropes, and all he's doing is weaving and bobbing, and Spinks. 21 shots never hit him. And then he just
was older
him a little wiggle like, come on, you got more? I mean,
that was
the
older Ali. It wasn't the younger Ali.
They had the music to it. It was like Can't Touch This.
Yeah.
They had one with that. The music.
I've seen that on YouTube.
Yeah, that one was funny.
And Ali still, I mean, what he does, he still resonates. And the young man's talking, he still resonates with our younger generation. He's that type of figure. And, you know, Ali, when you think of heavyweights back then, you didn't go into a ring coming out clean. And Ali found a way to do that, not being fundamental, but using the talent he was gifted with, his speed, his quickness, and then obviously getting to the opponent's head. I mean, absolutely. I mean, and we talk about the fights with Foreman, with Frazier. But, you know, going back to Ali with Ernie Terrell. I mean, what's my name? I mean, it's still talked about as one of the, though it wasn't a mega fight, it's still one of the most talked about fights that has ever been, or has ever graced the ring. And, you know, it's something that Ali could do. He just grabbed a hold of you, brought you in, and you were either a fan or you hated him.
Ali was so good that he would keep guys around for 14 and a half rounds and then take them out in 15. See, that's how good he was.
You know, in like the second round of Foreman, of the George Foreman fight, when he was against George Foreman, I don't know how he was just letting him hit him like that. He had him up against the ropes and, you know, he had him, I don't know how he let him do it like that. I think he was just getting bored with the normal stuff.
One thing is, Ali knew what he wanted to do to Foreman. He knew that Foreman was a big, aggressive guy who was going to try to kill him. As simple as that. And with a guy like that, they're not going to be able to try to kill you all fight long. They're going to run out of steam. So what Ali was able to do, and if you watch that fight carefully, I didn't even give George Foreman one round. And it was simple as this. Foreman really didn't hit Ali too clean. He hit him good, nice and clean in the second round. But Ali, he went to the ropes, and Foreman was mostly hitting off of the elbows. He couldn't come straight up because Ali's guard was a little too tight. Ali did a masterful job of counterpunching off of the ropes. Masterful job.
The guys were joined by Dr. Chris, and Chris had the good luck of interviewing Muhammad Ali. Chris, can you tell us about that?
Yeah, how you doing, guys?
Hey, Chris, how's it going?
Good. All right. Yeah, many years ago, I went to the Patterson fight when he fought Floyd Patterson in New York at the Madison Square Garden. And my old trainer had two press passes from the Philadelphia. I was from the Inquirer, according to the interview, and Zeke was from the Daily News. So he absolutely didn't get touched in seven or eight rounds, and he stopped Patterson on shots. So we go down there, and he lines up, and we're at the table. There's about eight sports writers. They think I'm a sports writer. So his father's behind him with a white suit, a black shirt, white tie, and a white hat. All the brothers are there, his brother Rahman and Bundini. They were all there, and it turned into a circus. We were laughing. He tries to be funny. He really does. He's telling us what a tough fight Floyd gave him, and we watched the same fight. Floyd starts laughing. He was blowing smoke. You know, Floyd starts laughing. So my buddy brought up the Frazier. So when are you going to fight Frazier again? He says, well, that got him steamed up. Not mad, but funny. You know, I mean, he gave him a lot of material. Zeke was quite a guy too. And he talked for about 15 minutes on Joe Frazier, which was real very enjoyable to listen to. And then I said, well, when's your next fight? He said, if you're not going to fight Frazier for a while, he said, well, I'm going to South Africa. He said, my brothers deserve a chance to see me down there. They said, they've never seen me fight. This is South Africa. There was a good heavyweight down there. So he's talking, you know, and he was telling me who made the arrangements. And then there was a sportscaster on the other side, sports writer, a real one. He tried to get nasty, and he says to Muhammad, you sure you're going down there for the brothers to see, or are you going down there for the money? Well, he got mad. He got furious. I mean, we were laughing for 20 minutes, a half hour, and this guy ruined the whole damn thing. And he said, he told him off, too. Ali told him off. You got no right asking me that question. How dare you? Oh, he was pissed. So he calls the interview off and walked right the hell out. He was mad.
Oh,
he didn't like being accused of it. Guy was calling him a liar, you know?
So, yeah.
And then I went to his training camp for the Thriller in Manila. Okay, now 3 weeks before the fight, maybe less than that, he was out of shape. He was 15, 20 pounds overweight. He looked terrible. His sparring partner, Rodney Bobick, was beating the hell out of him. He was laying on the ropes doing the rope-a-dope. And my little boy said, Dad, who's the champion? I said, the guy on the ropes. He said, how come he's getting beat up? I said, because he's lazy. He doesn't want to train. So he sparred six rounds. He must have got hit in the head 50 times. And I said, you know, I told my other son, he was with me, I said, those damn 16-ounce gloves, when I punch you when you got headgear on, they jar your damn head.
Yeah.
You could take a punch. He had a hell of a chin. So anyway, when the training was over, I thought he'd skip rope at the back. Did nothing. He went right to hell back to have lunch. So I said to my kids, I said, the shape he's in now, Frazier's going to kill him. So I looked when that fight was on television, or I think pay-per-view, whatever. He stepped in the ring, 217 pounds, trim as a damn lion. I mean, he was didn't have an ounce of fat on him. And I said, how in the hell did he get all that weight off in such a short period of time? He only had 2.5 weeks to go. Well, that doctor that used to follow him around all the time used to give him a lot of water pills, get all that water out of him. But he was in shape for the fight. I was surprised. He trained a little harder when he got over to the Philippines. Here's another interesting thing. When the camp's in Redding, it's up in the mountains. And when you're driving up this big hill, he's got these huge rocks on the left side, the right side, all the way up. And he honored Basilio, Willie Pep, Rocky Marciano, and he had them on the left side. Up the right side, he had Archie Moore, Sugar Ray, and he didn't have Joe Louis on there. I was shocked. Him
wow.
and Joe used to go at it. Joe called him a clown one time. He got perturbed. He didn't like it. You know? It was a lot of fun. I met him again in the hallway convention hall. Giardello was fighting near the end of his career. Sugar Ray came down for a payday, and he was there for that fight. And handsome guy. you know.
So. Dr. Chris, I have a question for you. How do you think a prime Muhammad Ali will measure up against the giant heavyweights of today?
Well, you know, he was pretty good size. He could get up to 225 very easily. So now, these guys that are around today are not any bigger punchers than Liston was.
Yeah.
Liston could hit like a mule. He took everything Liston had, and he gave Liston a shellacking. Liston was out of shape. He was breathing like a horse in a corner. He said his shoulder was hurt. He didn't train. He thought he was going to murder Ali, and Ali gave him a good damn whipping. Jabbed him silly and punched him about 40 times on the side of the head. So there's a big guy. Maybe, you know, when I say big, he was 215, 216, but he was big. He had massive hands. So there was some size to the guys he fought. If you remember him fighting Cleveland Williams was a big man.
Yeah.
He knocked him right the hell out. Cleveland Williams was as big as the heavyweights that are around today.
Yeah.
He knocked
him out. Was big, too.
You know?
Yep.
I gotta
step off. I want to say I'm gonna go on and listen to the podcast. A couple of things I gotta take care of. But I want to say thank
Jeff.
You very much for having me on. Rest in
Thanks
peace to the GOAT, Muhammad Ali.
Good thought for Sebastian.
I'll listen to the show later on. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Jeff.
Sure.
But you probably knew Muhammad Ali before he was Muhammad Ali. You probably knew him when he was Cassius Clay.
No, actually, Brady. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I did, but
62. I was scrolling on YouTube that 62 Cassius Clay versus someone.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, I had a chance to have breakfast one morning with a friend of mine at the Marriott, City Line Avenue, 54th Street in Philadelphia. Muhammad Ali at the time was living over in Overbrook, over around the 5900 block of Overbrook Avenue. And he came over there for some kind of a meeting. And I just could never get over, and still to this day, remember how humble he was when he was sitting there at the counter. We were having coffee, and this guy comes over, and he's really a jackass, pushing for a autograph. And he said, I don't have a pen. And I leaned over. I said, well, here, I've got one of my pens. I'll give you. And Mr. Cox, who was with me at the time, his jaw had just dropped because he was still trying to fathom that we were in the same room with this guy. And I'm saying what a great fighter he is. But I was just impressed by how humble a man was, how quiet he was. And, you know, Mama was talking earlier about him watching him on a show where he was talking to whoever's doing the interview had a couple fights. And he was undefeated. And he said, Muhammad Ali said, that's good. He said, you must have been good. And the guy said, yeah, I was good. He says, how about you? He says,
no, he said to him, the guy said to him, well, you're undefeated too.
Oh, yeah, the guy said to him. Yeah, guy says to him, you were undefeated too. He says, yeah, well, I'm great. He just had a great sense of humor. But,
Oh, he did. He liked to be funny. He liked to be funny.
Yeah, but he could also talk.
He could talk a little trash, too.
Well, he would talk trash. But, Brady, let me tell you something. He made boxing. He made boxing for the United
mm-hmm.
States. I mean, here's a guy, learned how to fight at 12.
Yeah.
At 16, he went to the Olympics and won a gold medal. That's how good he was. You know? And when you look back now at the tributes to him, Manny Pacquiao says we've lost one of the greats. Amir Khan says
mm-hmm.
it's extremely sad to witness the passing of a boxer with a great icon like Muhammad Ali. And even Oscar De La Hoya said it was one of the saddest days mm-hmm. as they mourn the loss of the great Muhammad Ali. I mean, these guys are not guys that are at the bottom of the barrel. These guys are that have a lot of respect for that are drawn from the boxing world. And they had a lot of respect for him.
Yeah, even like and everyone knew who Muhammad Ali was, you know. Like even if you were in like a hole for 20 years, you would still know who he was. Yeah, he was just, you know, everywhere. He was like the boxer. He's like, and you know, that kind of thing.
Great.
He's one of the best.
I asked you earlier to do some background. How about telling us about, we got Mike Lee is coming out of, Irish Mike Lee is one of my favorites. One, that he's Irish, and two, that he's a graduate of Notre Dame. One of two Notre Dame graduates that went on into fighting and is making a name for themselves. I'm blanking on the name again. Zbikowski came out of off the football field, went to Miami. In his off season, he would train and was actually a boxer. However, the poor guy ended up having some problems with some alcohol and lost both his profession in the NFL and his position in fighting. But he went and got himself cleaned up, and now he's has an honorable job as a firefighter at the Chicago Fire Department. So tell me about Mike Lee.
Hold on. I think I forgot to do my NFL report. Was I supposed to do that at the start or wait until 6:45?
Yeah, go ahead and do your NFL report.
Oh, no, you guys can finish that, and then I'll do it. We can finish the Mike Lee one. I'll do it.
And Mike Lee's still trained by Chris Bird. Am I correct?
Right, yes.
That's a smart person to have in your corner. Very smart person to have in your corner.
Asked me earlier what I thought Muhammad Ali would do against some of the big heavyweights today.
Yeah.
I think he would have done well because he was about 6'3". I swear I stood next to him. He towered over me. And he had a lot of speed, a lot of size, a lot of strength. He moved very well. I think he would have given Klitschko a good fight, guys that size. I think so. They would have had a hard time hitting him. He ran. He could run all night. Didn't bother him. You know, when he was in prime condition now, near the end of his career, he wasn't in good shape. The effects of all the punches he took started showing up. And that's when he went into Parkinson's. Plus, it's hard to determine whether it's all Parkinson's or the number of punches he took plus Parkinson's. You know, he just his head was battered. He wasn't himself. You saw how he went through the latter part of his life. But, it was quite a day. I watched it for 2 hours with Jim Brown, and everybody came on, everybody, even Clinton and the presidents. Everybody was talking. It's been the talk of TV all day long.
Great.
You're very controversial.
And you're right, Dr. Chris. Ali, He took a lot of punches, and I think a lot of that had to do with his talent. He was a talented boxer. He had the reactions. He had very good reactions, reflexes, and instincts to go along with that speed, foot and hand speed. The thing is, when you start getting older, you need to rely a little bit more on technique, even in the protection phase. And Ali was so darn tough. He was like, I could rely on my toughness more than, you know, forget technique all the time. He had technique, but he relied on his instincts. And he took a lot of punches relying on instincts.
Yeah, that rope-a-dope was, he was just catching his breath, taking a little rest. And, I've seen him take some ungodly shots from some big punches. It didn't even faze him. Frazier did knock him down with a left hook when he was moving back near the end of the fight.
Yeah.
That was probably the hardest left hook Joe Frazier ever threw in his life. And
so
he helped
body.
Him on his... Yeah, and he got up right away. I mean, he was right up there. That first fight with Joe Frazier was inhuman. The punishment that Joe Frazier took, along with Ali, It was inhuman. I thought both of them were going to wind up in a hospital half dead. And I never seen anybody push the physical limits like Frazier pushed himself that night. I mean, it took a superhuman performance that night for him to beat Ali. And Ali, you know, Ali got hit a lot too. He got hit a lot because you just can't stay away from Frazier for 15 rounds. He's on top of you every damn second. He makes you fight 3 minutes of every round. But it took its toll on him over a period of years. That's a shame. You know, nobody lasts forever.
Yeah, and that's 15 rounds. And that's another thing. When measuring up against the heavyweights nowadays, Ali fought 15 rounds. He couldn't fight all round of 15 rounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody coasted a little bit in those 15-round fights. Or they never make it to the end. Used to be a joke in boxing. If a guy's going to go 15 rounds on a heavy bag, bet on a bag. That's going to do it. You know, they used to joke around about that. They knew how to pace themselves. He knew how to pace themselves. People said, well, he's fooling around. He was pacing himself. He knows if he fought, you know, a brutal fight. At like how many Frazier Ali fights do you have in you? One or two in your lifetime. You know, everybody had one or two great fights, and they were his two great fights. And I think he peaked. You know, after that, after the thrill in Manila, he peaked, and then I don't think he was ever the same again after that. You know, you look back through the fighters' careers, they all have one or two great fights that, you know, kind of gave them their legacy, you know. So, but what's going on? I saw Keith on last night. They gave him a big interview.
Yeah. Yep. Keith's getting ready. His goal, as he's saying it, is to be known as the hardest-hitting welterweight in the division.
Who, Keith Thurman?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. He.
He's got a good. He can hit, but I don't know if he can make it to the greatest.
No,
he
I,
could.
I,
make the,
I think he's the hardest hitter in the welterweight division right now. Who hits any harder? I mean,
nobody.
You know,
true.
I don't think so. He's the best. I'll tell you what. His left hook to the body is damn near as good as Triple G. I mean, it's effective, you know, except he's a welterweight. The other guy's a middleweight, but it's just
right.
as good. He could cave your side in.
When Keith plants his feet, he probably is the hardest-hitting welterweight. His style right now doesn't lend to a hole, but he has to really stop real fast and plant his feet. Because he has a moving sort of style nowadays. But when his feet are planted, I think he is the hardest hitting welterweight.
Yeah, when he's on the flats of his feet, he does hit. He hits awful hard. Awful hard, especially with that left hook. That left hook to the body is devastating.
All right. I guess I'll do my NFL report now. First is, will Jared Goff do good? Like, first, I think he'll be comfortable in L.A. because he went to Cal for college. So
right.
Now that the Rams are in L.A., he'll be very comfortable. He also was coached by someone who goes like Roethlisberger and, you know, a lot of other people. He coached Tebow, too, though, so he might end up like Tebow. You know, Goff didn't have a very good line in Cal. You know, if you watch some of his highlights, like, it was like he got 2 seconds to, like, look around, and then they came right in. That would be a good time if he was, like, a great quarterback. But, you know, you can kind of see it, but you kind of can't, you know. LA doesn't have a very good line. But he had good back receivers in Cal, and LA has some pretty good receivers, so, yeah, that'll probably work out for them. 2 years from now, I think, the Eagles, like, you know, passing game, receiving game, throwing game, will be stronger if they keep Aguilar and they get to pick up a few more, because Wentz and Aguilar, like, they'll work together more and, you know, all that.
Yeah.
Their Eagles also got a new hybrid West Coast offense. So, I don't know how that's going to work. Aguilar, he's getting used to the West Coast hybrid, he said in an interview. The Bucks also have a lot of veteran secondaries, which will help with the rookies, because, you know, they got some rookie safeties and cornerbacks. But, yeah, they have a veteran, so that'll help them, you know, because they got experience and all that. Arizona's run game this year, is going to be amazing. They have a trio of running backs, you know. They have David Johnson, I think. Do you remember the guy he used to play for? Yeah, I don't remember his name, but he's really fast. And they also have a couple rookies, like a two-year, like one rookie and a two-year veteran, I think. They're going to be really good. Former Eagles offensive lineman Evan Mathis, he loves his new offense in Arizona. You know, they're going to have a good team because, you know, they're picking people up. Larry Fitzgerald, he's, you know, you can tell everyone in Arizona wants to get Larry a Super Bowl ring, so that's probably going to push him. They're going to push him more. They're going to be a pretty good team. Did you guys hear about the new Mercedes-Benz Stadium under construction?
Yeah, in Atlanta.
The Falcons? Did you see the pictures that the pictures are supposed to be?
Yeah, it's a nice-looking stadium.
It's good. Yeah, it looks like a nice stadium.
You know
what?
It kind
of looks
Mercedes-Benz, right, Brady?
What? Yeah, Mercedes-Benz.
They bought the rights
to the
stadium.
But it's a Superdome.
Yeah, they bought the rights to the stadium, but also the former president and CEO of Mercedes-Benz America is now the president of the Falcons.
Oh, he's the I don't know how that's gonna work. Businessmen.
Funny.
Usually, businessmen, CEOs, they become owners. They just need to know how to sell. They need to know sailing, you know, all that. Yeah, it's going to be a beautiful stadium too. The Georgia Dome has been working since 92, I think, 92 or 93. Yeah, it's going to be a place in the Georgia Dome. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well,
thank you, Brady. That was a great report. So we got to get back to the boxing thing here.
Oh, hold on. Right. It's also estimated to cost $1.4 billion.
Yeah.
And, if I were them, if it cost $1.4 million, I would just use the public park, you know, instead of using $1.4 billion. Yeah, that's just amazing. But, yeah.
Yep.
Well, that's Radio Dallas Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you something, Zito. We have Miguel Cotto coming out and talking about Canelo Alvarez and his decision to give up the WBC belt to fight Triple G. Do you think that's a smart move or not? And I want to ask Chris. I want to ask you the same question.
He's giving the belt up not to fight Triple G.
Right.
Yeah, right now I think it's a smart decision at this very moment for Canelo. I'm always an advocate for a person, if you're not naturally that weight, or you haven't been fighting in that weight class, then you shouldn't go up to fight the best in that weight class. If Canelo's going to go to 160, I would say if you're going to fight Triple G now, have him come down. Have him come down to maybe 156. Or something more advantageous. Because if Canelo's going to move up to 160, he better take some lesser fights to test that weight. I just don't think that he's not ready for it. I just don't think size-wise he's ready for Golovkin. And that's nothing wrong with that. It's not saying Canelo's scared or anything, but that's a realism in boxing. The bigger guy usually has the advantage.
Yeah, he's young. Yeah, like you said, he's not ready. He's too young. He doesn't have that. Yeah, you know, he's 25. You know, so yeah, he doesn't have that much experience. You know.
Yeah. Well, I think experience-wise, he's good.
I have to agree with you 100% about him moving up. I don't think it's a good move at this time to fight, like you just said, the best at that weight. Move up and then fight the best. Like you say, maybe a few tune-ups at somebody around 160. We'll see what he's got at 160. I think he's risking a lot of money by going up, and if he gets a bad beating, it's going to do a lot. It's going to hurt his career.
Yeah.
I mean, he's doing well at 154. Why the hell won't he stay there for a while?
Sure.
You know, he don't have to come out and be brave and say, you know, I'm not afraid of Triple G. Ask Triple G if he'd want to fight Kovalev. He'd probably say no. You know?
He better say no.
You know what I mean? Who the hell wants to move up and fight a killer? You say where the hell you're at. You know, I mean, I'm just sitting here thinking, how the hell is Andre Ward, as good as he is, I don't know if he can overcome that size and strength and roughness of Kovalev.
Yeah,
you know,
I've learned not to bet against Kovalev when it comes to you, Dr. Chris.
You know, he's a mean, tough guy. And Andre Ward, he can fight at any level. He can fight tough. He can box. He can do anything. It's just sad that you know, that he has to move up in weight. I thought he could have stayed at 168 for a while. But then he had contract disputes and everything else. He didn't make any money for 3 years. So I guess that's a big money fight for him. And, you know, that's going to be a very interesting fight.
Yeah, Andre Ward fits in the light heavyweight good, but he's not the biggest. Like Kovalev is big for light heavyweight. He's a big guy.
Yeah, he's bigger. He hits harder. Andre Ward is a better boxer, there's no question about it.
Yeah.
I don't know if he can overcome, you know, the size difference, the size and strength difference, because Andre Ward, if he comes in at 174, he's going to weigh 175 maybe for the fight, 176, where Kovalev's going to come in the 80s, high 80s. He'll probably come in at 87, 88.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to be fighting a man with 10 more pounds on him, a good 10 pounds on him. So that makes a difference, guys. I my first experience sparring with a light heavyweight, their hands are heavy. The body's heavy. You go to block their jab, and you wind up getting hit in the face with the back of your own hand. They jam the damn jab right up against your nose. You know, you can't hold their jab off. Sugar Ray Leonard said that many times. When you move up in weight, it's hard to hold a guy's jab off if he's got too much weight on you.
Yeah.
He didn't like to fight, you know, bigger guys. And you know, I moved up to fight Hagler. That was it. And I think he got lucky. I think if Hagler's trainers had made the right moves for him, give him a smaller ring, and not try to get him down to 156, come in at 156. I think it would have been a different fight. But Christ, the ring was big enough to hold the two separate fights.
I don't know. Hagler came out. Hagler started trying to box in that fight. I think if he would have came out trying to really kind of more or less get at Sugar Ray, it would have been a different fight.
I think he should have tried to out-muscle him, use his weight advantage and his size advantage, and out-muscle him. Instead, he tried to box with a boxer. That's not the brightest thing to do.
No, a faster,
you know,
boxer.
So, Hagler was a good boxer, though.
Yeah.
I watched him beat Briscoe all 15 rounds. He was amazing. Amazing. I mean, he could box right-handed, left-handed.
Yeah.
But Briscoe would back him in the corner, thinking he'd have him. He'd go back into the corner, jabbing with his left, he turned right around, jabbing with the right move, right past Briscoe, and have Briscoe spinning. He had Briscoe off balance all night long. That was one of the best boxing exhibitions I've ever seen. So, you know, I don't know.
Well, Chris, you've always said that moving up or down in weight never helped the fighter, and that you felt that that would hurt them all the way around. So that pretty much sews up everything you've been saying here.
I always felt that way. The only guy that made a liar out of me about 10 times was Pacquiao. A little son of a gun, he'd move up in weight and it didn't have any effect on him. I don't know how the hell he did it. He had small hands, small bones, and he's knocking guys around that were welterweights. And he really started out, you know, 115. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's a tiny man. I never, all the boxing people I know around here said, oh, Pacquiao's going to get killed at 135. Pacquiao's going to get killed at 147. And he made a liar out of all of us.
Let me ask you, tonight we've got Francisco Vargas against Orlando Salida. What's your thoughts on that one?
For me, I think Salidas is one hell of a fighter.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good puncher. He's a relentless pursuer. He stays on top of you. He's had some great fights in the past. And the other guy, to me, the other guy's an upcomer. I mean, he hasn't proven himself that much. It'd be an interesting fight to see what he's got and what the other guy's got left.
Mm-hmm.
The young, how many fights does Vargas have?
He's got Vargas has 23.
Mm-hmm.
23-0-1 with 17 knockouts. And Salidas has got 43-13-3 with 30 knockouts.
That's Orlando Salido?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Oh. Well, I mean,
is that going to be on pay-per-view?
Yes.
Oh.
On tonight.
I know. Orlando Salido is a
tough
guy.
Sorry, Brady, it's on HBO.
It's on HBO, yeah.
Yeah,
so Orlando
Salido.
Yeah, Orlando Salido is a tough customer. I mean, any fight that he's involved in, it's going to be problems. I mean, he's a guy who's just not easy to deal with. He's a pressure fighter, and he does have a powerful punch. He could take a punch too. The last time I saw him was against Mikey Garcia, and Mikey Garcia stopped him. But it looked to me as if it was good that it stopped when it did, because Garcia was seeming to be a little uncomfortable with Salido's pressure. One thing is, Salido, he's there to be hit. So, it's just a matter of keeping him off of you. And I'm going to relate back to the fight with Lomachenko and Salido. Lomachenko came in. It was basically his second professional fight. And he survived against Salido. He actually grew against Salido. And that's what has me so much impressed with Lomachenko, that he went through that ordeal with Salido and came out. He didn't win, but he came out the better fighter for that. And we'll see if Vargas can do the same. It's not easy dealing with Salido, especially
mm-hmm.
when he takes your power and he's on top of
you.
Juan Manuel Lopez.
Great.
Vargas isn't a heavily muscled person. I got a picture of him in my mind. I saw him fight in California. He's not heavily muscled and powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have him right?
Yeah.
He's smooth muscled. He's not cut.
You know,
the only thing is, isn't Salido moving up a little bit? Didn't he a lightweight? Is Vargas a lightweight or is he at 140?
Salido is
a featherweight.
He's a featherweight?
Yeah.
Super featherweight, yeah.
Well, what's that Vargas fight at? What weight?
Yeah, I don't have that, Chris. I'm sorry.
Who's moving up? I'm a little confused because there's so many Vargases. Christ, everybody's named Vargas. Gomez or Vargas.
Francisco El Bandido Vargas.
I, I lose track of who's who sometimes.
Queen Aziz,
I can't remember them all.
And Lomachenko's coming back in the ring on June 11th up there in New York at Madison Square Garden.
Okay. I know they were the negotiations with Lomachenko and Nick Walters fell through. That was a fight I would really like to see.
Yeah, he's going to fight Rocky Martinez.
Rocky Martinez. Okay, he's fighting Rocky Martinez. Ooh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Rocky, he's very credible. He's very extremely credible. It's going to be an interesting fight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can tell more after I see the fight.
Yeah.
I'll tell you who's going to win after the fight. I don't
know. Except for when it comes to Kovalev. Kovalev, you tell us before.
Kovalev, he's a tough guy. I'm impressed with real tough, nasty people. You know what the guy said about him one night? He was saying he's meaner than Sonny Liston in the ring, and he's meaner than Ray Robinson out of the ring. And I said, that's going back quite a number of years. But Ray Robinson was he had a mean streak in him outside of the ring. Joe Louis grabbed him one time and broke up. He was smacking some woman around.
Yeah.
Louis went over and grabbed him.
Yeah.
Said, sit the hell down. And he did. At his club, at his nightclub.
Yeah.
So I don't know where he got that information, but this guy didn't seem that old. But he's just a mean guy, a tough guy. He wants to win. He wants to kill you. He wants to kill you. And that impresses the hell out of me. And Andre Ward, like I said before, he's a very impressive guy. It's a shame one of those guys has to lose.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Well, you're needling me about Kovalev, huh?
Oh, man, yeah. Never betting against Kovalev when you say he's going to win.
From Bethlehem, Edgar Cherry will be fighting a guy by the name of Haskell Rhodes. Rhodes is 23-1-1, and Edgar is 34-7-2. And then you got, like I told you, Mikey, Irish Mike Lee is going tonight 16-0-0 and against Mike Snyder, who's 10-3-3.
Wait.
Okay.
Yeah, is that after Edner's other fight?
It's the 23rd, just before. He's not fighting on Cleese undercard anymore, Brady. They separated. In fact, Edner's going to be in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, which Dr. Chris is going to go up to see. And we have...
That was June...
Yes, June. Right.
June 23rd?
Right. Yes, and we're going to be up at you and I are going to go up and take a ride up and see Edner and Keith and Dan Birmingham later on this week.
Oh, seriously?
Yep.
Cool.
Yep. Yep.
They're matching Edner up tough again, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Yep.
Edgar never gets an easy fight, does he?
No.
He doesn't get an easy decision either.
No.
He's like Cunningham. He fights killers all the time. He fights good fighters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just... this guy, I mean, 23-1, that's pretty good. You said 23-1,
yeah.
Didn't you, Frank?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. There's so many guys coming into the country, and they're so hungry. Because of the massive amount of money that's out there to be had, and these guys are hungry, and these fights are good. I saw a tough Russian about 2 weeks ago. The guy was tough, little stocky guy, nasty little guy. He was tough. I mean, and by the way, Tyson, they had Mike Tyson fighting Razor Ruddock, two fights. They played him back to back. Tyson's got a head made out of iron. I didn't realize he could take a punch so well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He, Ruddick was a big, strong guy, 6'3", 239, hit like a mule. He was hitting Tyson body shots, which would bring an elephant down. And that damn Mike took him and countering with rights and knocking him on his rear end. You know, it was one hell of a war. I never realized that fight was that good. But the second one went all 12 rounds, and Tyson was he won on points. He didn't knock him out. But
Mike
the
Tyson,
Razor Ruddock's face looked like, 15 guys were kicking him at the same time because his face was all swollen and beat up, and Tyson didn't have a mark on him. He didn't have a mark on him. I don't know how he did it, but they're rerunning him. Showtime having their 30th anniversary. I'm sorry. 30th anniversary. We had some great fights on this week.
Yeah, Tyson's problem was never his chin. It usually was his breathing. Tyson, he would usually spend. If he couldn't get you out of there or at least make you respect him to the point to where he kind of could do what he wanted to do, then he would get tired. And he would get so tired that he couldn't do a whole lot coming into later rounds. That's why Tyson, he got knocked out by Buster Douglas later rounds. He got knocked out with Holyfield later rounds. And that was because these guys, they either didn't get hit with his storm or they kind of weathered it. And Tyson threw himself out. That was his only knock on Tyson, and as far as boxing the mitt.
He was in poor condition against Buster Douglas. He went to Japan. He was a lost person.
God, yeah.
He lost his trainer. He changed trainers. He had a bunch of clowns in his corner.
Exactly.
That was a bad, bad move. Don King ought to be clubbed in the head for letting him go over there and fight like that without a trainer and screwing around all the time. I mean, that was sad to see. Sad to see. And then you saw Buster Douglas got cold cocked by Holyfield the next fight.
The next fight,
and
he doesn't train. Buster Douglas doesn't train the next fight. So.
Yeah, Buster Douglas trained real hard for Tyson, didn't train at all for Holyfield.
Not at all.
He put on about 40 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
He said he was eating too many chicken necks. He got up to about 290, and he took it all off. He was telling me what he was eating. I thought, he wants to kill himself.
Speaking of that,
shape,
Chris, I don't
right.
know if you saw this week that your favorite fighter, the big Irishman, as you call him, Tyson Fury, has developed a very large midsection that he's trying to work off before he gets killed in the ring with Klitschko.
What now he's
now
he's taking it easy. You're trying to tell me he won one fight and he's got a belly on him already.
Yeah,
how much did he weigh?
He put on about 60 pounds. He said.
Ooh.
How much?
Yeah. 60.
Oh.
60. He's a big guy.
He has to be 3-something. He has to be like almost 320.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
are you kidding me? 320? Holy cow.
I
can't believe he let himself go.
He's going to spend all his energy taking that off. What's he going to have for the fight?
Yep.
Wow. I took off 30 pounds one time from when I went from football, tried to make the middleweight division. I was playing tackle at Delaware, and I lost 30 pounds in about 2 months. I was so damn weak I couldn't break an egg. It took me a long while to level off, you know? You lose that weight fast. It drains you.
It drains.
Damn right, 320 pounds. And he's no ballerina out there. He needs to be a little lighter to move good.
Sure.
I don't think he should come in heavy against Klitschko.
No.
You know, if he can't move out of the range of them bombs, you know, 320. Mm. He is big frame, though.
Yeah. Well, guys, we're up against our time limit. So,
all right.
All right, Chris. Thanks a million. I appreciate all your help again, as usual.
All right. Thanks. Good talking to you guys.
Good talking to you.
Hey, someday we're supposed to have lunch up here, you two guys. I gave you my number. We're going to have lunch in Delaware.
I'll give you a call to set it up.
I'm not allowed.
Right. I'll see you guys.
All right.
Yeah, you can go, Brady. You got your mother to fly you up to Delaware. You can go to lunch with
her. She's not going
to
let me go.
Fly you up.
Yeah. Z, thanks very much for everything. I appreciate your time. And tell the film producer that we're keeping a good thought for he goes to – is it San Francisco he's going in next week or the following week?
I'm not sure when, but he's going soon. So.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's good. But, again, you want to lead us out?
I sure do. First, I want to thank Captain Ron for joining us earlier. I want to thank Brady, as always, and Dr. Chris. And thank you, Butch, and the rest of my Fighting Words family. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob. And if anyone wants to hear any Fighting Words, please do call.
Brady?
Thanks for having me.
Okay, thanks for being on with us. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and see somebody in uniform, introduce your children to them. Let them know that they're not everybody is a bad guy. The two things you can say to anybody in uniform, one is be safe, and the other one is thank you for your service. That means a world of good to each and every one of us in the uniform. These programs are also dedicated to those who lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcat, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Henler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Onofa Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogo, Longview Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township, PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Patrol Sergeant Robert Wilson, Philadelphia Police Department, Louisiana Trooper Steve Vincent, Harris County Deputy Darrell Goforth, Prince William County Deputy Ashley Goforth, Yidden, Useless Texas Patrol Officer David Hefner, and Hillsborough County Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff. My brothers and sisters, though, you may be 10-7 at this time. Sometime you'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields, and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hands. Good night and God bless. My heart is so much.
1999. County dispatched in 1999. All units be advised, 1999 has responded to his last emergency. May God bless his soul.
We love you.